You going to give me the Amplified Oath? Exodus 32, verse 4. This is a question that we read the other day and was brought up. Not only that, but this desk is going out. That was Roy Seabold. Midday, isn't it a day? There he is. Now we can start. Roy, this desk is coming apart here. If you can maybe mention that to Wayne and company and get him to glue it and fix it. Yesterday, Exodus chapter 32 and verse 4, the question was brought up concerning the golden calf, the plural pronoun, where they said, "These be thy gods." You mentioned that the word God here was Elohim. So the question was, is these in the Hebrew or is it in English? Or just was it inserted in the English to agree with the translation gods from Elohim? Now, normally you would think that that would be the case, that Elohim being translated, choosing to translate into God, they'd have to supply the English and say these. But we checked it out and found out that the Hebrew for these is Eleh, E-L-E-H, long E. It's a plural demonstrative pronoun, and the plural is in the Hebrew, which raises a question. And so this rather forces Elohim to be translated gods, although Ellicott and a number of others do translate God, albeit many most translate gods. What kind of explanations do you have for such a unusual and strange thing? Yes?
It's possible that one image, it doesn't sound like it's very possible, but it's possible that if there was association with heathen worship here, with the pagan, maybe the bull worship or so forth in Egypt, and plus maybe they were trying to make an association with Yahweh somehow, if there was a possibility that one image could represent more than one god, or if one image had to represent one god, I don't know, that's the only thing I can think of.
Okay.
In the verse, if I'm reading it properly, it says that he made a molten calf singular, and then they, Israel, the people, said, "These be thy gods." Oh, Israel was brought thee up out of Egypt, which would kind of concur with what Greg is saying, in that there it isn't necessary that he's saying that the molten calf was the God's plural, but they made the molten calf, and also they had knew that Yahweh brought them out, so they're likening Yahweh worship to the worship of the calf that they'd seen in Egypt, saying that these are your gods, the two combined. The God.
So you're thinking these might be Yahweh plus the calf, huh?
Me having been
okay.
In Catholicism, see, it might be part of the Catholic. That's exactly what that is.
Yeah. Okay.
Only there they have more than one calf.
Okay. Anybody else? It is a strange thing, isn't it? Yes.
Because they took off their earrings and so forth, the calf was made up of many pieces of their own belongings. And so all of this gold, these many pieces of gold coming together to make this one calf, but if it came from all the different people, each one contributed a piece of this, all of these things that you contributed to become.
Okay, meaning not this, the finished product, but these that you have brought, is your God now, Elohim God, or is your Elohim gods? Well, these is plural. So, if these many things are your gods, what would he mean by gods? Or does he mean these many pieces is your Elohim God? Because Elohim could be translated God if it wasn't for the word these, and it could be even with these if these doesn't refer to the image but refers to the pieces. Okay, Greg?
Well, there's three different ideas in my mind.
Interesting thought. I like yours too, go ahead. I was more profound than Greg thought. But I was still back in the other one.
Okay, well, the first thing is that when they worshipped the bull in Egypt, they...
Go ahead, you're doing fine.
There was, like, in the temple of Serapis, they had all these different sarcophagus where they buried each of the bulls that was the supposed incarnation of the deity at that cemetery. And as soon as that one died, they had another one already to be the incarnation of the deity next. So this long line of these were the animals were the incarnations of this deity. And then, so that might be why. And there's another thing, and that is...
Well, make a conclusion. Draw your conclusion.
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
So that one? Well, since this was a gold image, mm-hmm. the gold image could symbolize the living animals that were, which were supposed to be the place where the deity resided. Because it was living bulls that they worshipped in Egypt mm-hmm. as the place where the deity resided.
Okay.
So it could be that this is the symbol of all okay. the different incarnations. The second idea is that they were including the God that was visiting with them on Mount Sinai along with the gap. I think we already talked about that yesterday. You know, that it was plural in as much as there was a deity.
Well, that's what Dan was saying.
Okay. No? The second idea.
You rejected it because it came from Catholicism.
The reason I didn't reject it is because of the fact that it says elsewhere in Kings that they, you know, worshipped. Maybe that's a great thing. That they worshipped the Lord with their high places. So it's possible that that is a valid point. And then the third idea was. I can remember it now, was that possibly they were deifying Aaron and Moses or something in their thinking.
Mm-hmm. I still think your first point was interesting. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point, the first one, yes.
It's kind of like a liberal commentator, because it's not it's what it doesn't say, but could it possibly have been, I mean, no real way to know, but that they also made other gods maybe smaller or brought out mixed multitude, maybe idols or something. Along with the golden calf being the central, and then others around it, as far as like maybe smaller golden calves or smaller idols or something, saying these just kind of bring out the whole work.
I don't like it, but it's interesting. Okay.
The reason I said what I did was because I was thinking Mount Carmel and Elijah, so that's what they had done to the old church. That's fine.
Now, in verse 1, the people said, make us gods. Could it be that Aaron possibly, when he just made the calf, although he knew better not to make the calf, he was willing to go up to a certain point, you know, further and just make one and say, these be thy gods, just this calf?
Because he didn't say these be, the people said these be. Okay, you've done some good thinking here. I've looked through the commentators, and they were not a bit of help. And there's not a bit, not a shred. And the several ideas advanced here were better than anything I've read in the commentary. I'll tell you what I think is a plausible explanation. It is a difficult question. You have brought up some good points. First of all, according to the principles of hermeneutics, there's a parallel passage in Acts. So let's turn there and see what that says. Chapter 7, verses 40 to 42. Sometimes you can help nail things down by looking at parallel passages, particularly if it's an Old Testament and New Testament parallel, because you've got the Greek to work with the Hebrew. Acts 7:40 says, saying unto Aaron, make us gods. And the Greek here is theos, which is the accusative plural. So the word gods, the Holy Spirit chose to record the history of them saying, make us gods, although the Hebrew can be used to refer to either God singular, as some translated, or God's plural, as others translated. Yet, the same God who wrote the Old Testament as the New Testament, it was the same God, wasn't it? Theos said gods, which agrees with what the Holy Spirit told Moses in using Ele, the plural, accusative pronoun, a demonstrative pronoun in Exodus. So that tells us something. So the people did say, make us gods, plural, to go before us. For as for this Moses, which brought us out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what has become of him. And they made a calf in those days. Not they made calves, but they made a calf in those days. And they offered sacrifice unto the idol, not unto the idols. That's why I told Jamie, interesting, I didn't like it. And they rejoiced in the works of their own hands. Now, let's go back to the book of Exodus again. You can hold it, actually, if you got it, but otherwise we'll go back to it again. In Exodus 32, and let's go through it verse by verse, and let's look at a plausible explanation here. And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, that's when the people made this decision. The people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods. The word up is interesting. Why is the word up interesting? I'm thinking that it is showing an a demonstrative attitude of the people. He's the high priest. Up, make us gods. Before, you know, they were willing to stone. They were on the verge of stoning Moses on a couple occasions, who was to be God unto them. And at the Red Sea, you know how vehement they were, and the charges made. And so, these people were people that would tend to panic and get in the flesh. They were flesh people, and so they undoubtedly were putting a tremendous amount of pressure. They were in violence. They were upset at Aaron. He had a fear of them. They were going to stone Moses on a couple occasions in the history, and once before this, and he saw what kind of, you know, how they became. He could become fearful. And so they said, up, make us gods, which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what has become of him. There's two possibilities, and one is that the mixed multitude, which are the same group that complained at the Red Sea, according to the scriptures, and were wanting to stone Moses and accusing him that to bring him out in the wilderness to die, it was his only aim after seeing all the ten plagues slaughter Egypt, and to see God bring him out with a high hand, yet they made such fantastic charges, and the reasonability is that since all 3.5 million people are not talking to Moses, even all 500,000 males, there's going to be spokesmen of some sort. It's the anarchists today that are the spokesmen everywhere around the country. Whenever something happens, you know, you're going to build a you're going to have super tankers come in. You're going to have build a Triton submarine base. You're going to do anything. It's always the communists, the anarchists, the radical. That rush to the newspapers, they write in, they rush to the radio, they write every place, they lay on the street, they carry the signs. They become the spokesman for everybody else. Their voice is always heard. And so the rationale is that these people became the spokesman. It rather fits. There is another clause in Acts we'll get to later that might lead us to believe that, although not dogmatically, but might lead us to believe that rather they were the elders which represented the people rather than the mixed multitude. I don't know that we could prove either case. And so they asked, they were saying, in effect, Yahweh in Moses is now gone. Remember, they did not have an individual rapport with God like we do. But don't think of it that way. They didn't. They were people who, without knowledge of God,
They hadn't got to the tabernacle, the priesthood yet. They had been living in Egypt for their whole life, and their parents had lived in Egypt before them. And they knew nothing. They didn't have a priest or anything there. They did not have the concept that we now have and could easily project back into them. And it was Moses who knew God and God talked with, not them. They were going along with the sacrificial system. In other words, they were very much akin to the Roman Catholics today, who are sinners, who don't know God, are not born again, who know nothing about Him. They're just going through the mechanics because the priest knows God, supposedly. And in that vein, that's kind of a people. They're superstitious. They don't understand the principles of God. They don't understand the things of God. It's anything they're told. They're doing it. And they recognize that to them, I mean, since they never saw Yahweh, and Moses was to be Yahweh to them, and he was to be their leader, he was to be their God, then their God is gone now. When Moses is gone, their God is gone. Just like the Catholic, when he leaves, like Kathy Wood said, when we leave the Catholic Church, the building, we teach the children to say goodbye, God, and they come in and say hello, God, see, and this is the same with them. Well, goodbye, God. He's been up there. I mean, he's gone. They've equated it with Moses, and so now they're going to need many gods to help them now. If Yahweh is gone, they're going to need many gods to help them now. And this would be a concept of a lifetime in Egypt. They've only been out of about a month, out of Egypt, and hit Mount Sinai. And so they're asking for many gods to help them. And since they're using the Hebrew language, and there isn't words for the various gods, they have to use the word Elohim. They want many Elohim. If they were speaking Egyptian, they could get down to detail and begin naming the law if they were going to actually and in fact trust in Egyptian gods. But since they've abandoned, Egyptian gods are found to be deficient, and since they've been led out and away from them, they may need a new god. New gods. They're going to need lots of them to help them. I mean, that's the concept. They're going to need lots of gods. Whether it's the same gods in Egypt or whether it be new gods, if they don't have Yahweh, they're going to need a lot of gods because, it's kind of rough out there heading to the wilderness. The concept is you're going to need gods for, they had gods for everything in Egypt. Yes.
Acts 7:39 says, to whom our fathers...
Wait a minute. You're getting ahead of me. Let me bring it. You're stealing my thunder. I'll take it in progression. You're doing a good job. Okay. Aaron was probably reluctant then to make these many gods, because he was the high priest. He had not yet come into a priesthood, but he was in an preeminent position, and he knew the truth, and he was reluctant to undoubtedly make many gods, but he feared the people. And he asked for earrings, and Aaron said to them, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, of your sons and of your daughters, and bring them unto me. Now how fast would upset, rebellious people be? And a people like that, how fast would they be to break off the earrings? He may have hoped, this is only conjecture, he may have hoped, okay, you want God, you got to make him out of something, bring me your earrings. Well, if they're not willing to give those up, I can't do anything for you. And maybe I was going to kind of slow them down a little bit, but they did, they were willing, they were panicking. I was in a church one time, had a good pastor, and it was Assembly of God Church, and it was rather large. And he brought in a music ministry director, a woman, who had a lot of musical talent, but was highly sensitive and was kind of like a bull in the china shop. And he knew the woman, and he knew she had ability, and he brought her in to whip the church in shape. And she did, I suppose. That is the music ministry. But in the process, he found her railroading and demanding and like a top sergeant and so forth, and there was problems, and I wasn't close enough to it to know really what the problems were. But lo and behold, there was a meeting called one day, and it was a surprise to me, and there was a meeting called, and it was over the music ministry director, and it came out that the pastor had asked the board to fire the music ministry director, And in that church, he didn't have the power to do it himself. They just couldn't get along, and she wouldn't go along. She wouldn't obey him, and things wouldn't be done right, and whatever. So the boy refused. And so he brought it to the congregation. And it was an ultimatum. It was either, well, either she goes or I go. Because I'm going to be the pastor, I'm the authority here, and if she's going to sit there and buck and do everything, I don't know what she was doing. And he said there's a lot of things that he could say he didn't want to say to her. And there's always difficulty, you know, when you hold things back from the people, too. It's difficult to say it, but it's difficult not to say it because they don't know how to think and vote. Now, if they have ultimate confidence in the pastor, you don't need to tell them anything. But if they don't have ultimate confidence, and they hear things, and they got close to somebody else, and they were close to her, and they begin thinking that maybe he's not being fair, then he either has to come out and tell them all kinds of things that he shouldn't have to tell them and hates to tell them, or else he runs a certain risk. Well, he took the risk and not said much. And as a result, the people took the side of the ministry director. And they lost a real good pastor, real good one. He left. She stayed. And I said all that now for a connection, I can make it. Oh, yeah. And I saw in that meeting, they held a meeting afterwards then, and I was in the meeting, and they didn't have a pastor. And they were panicky. Some of the people in the I couldn't believe the flesh that some of them were in, and the panic. I mean, one man got up from the aisle, and he was just shaking, and they were talking about, you know, pastor, they had a hood once. We got to get a pastor. We can't, you know. And he was just about ready to go through the floor. He was about to go to pieces. He was going crazy. I mean, we can't wait another minute to get a pastor. We can't, you know, try this pastor out and try that pastor out. I mean, he just couldn't emotionally handle that. And we got to have one now, quick. I mean, you know, grab the first one that will say yes, you know. And he was just, I guess, they were panicky. We've got to have a God to lead us here. We can't stand a little bit of an interim hill, see. And these are people that were supposedly spirit-filled, Pentecostals. So what must have been like back in Egypt without those concepts, you know? They were panicky. They were out in the wilderness. I mean, there was... And that Sinai Peninsula, if you've ever looked at it by at airplane views, is not exactly what you call Palm Beach or something, you know. It's a pretty rough area. And so, being reluctant, but he filled the people. He asked for the earrings, and so he made one image to represent the one Elohim, since he was forced to do it. And so they wanted many gods, but he wouldn't give them many gods. He was going to make one image. He was going to be true. If he's going to be true to the one concept, and if he had to make an image, he was going to make the image to represent the true God. And remember, he too had come out of Egypt not long before, and so he did. But he tried to keep it representing Yahweh. He said, and all the people break, and he, verse 4, received them at their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf. And they said, these be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. They were stuck with one calf. They wanted many. Making nothing they could do about that. So they turned it around and they turned it to represent many gods. And that's all they had to work with. So they said, these be thy gods that brought you out of the land of Egypt. They were turning this to mean to be the many gods that they were talking about, that they needed. And they were even at a place where they were doubting God, Yahweh himself, as being the one who is their deliverer. But many gods did this work. And this is the same thing you see later as you read about in the Philistines and so forth. You read about... for example, these things seem almost incongruous. People can think that way, but you're not in a heathen mentality. You got light in your soul, and things look different. And you look out here with people without light. And they're in Christian America, and it's bad enough. But back in heathen lands, their concepts are so far different. So our problem is we stagger in our minds at the heathen concept, and can hardly believe that they would ever mean that, because we have so much light that it seems so ridiculous. But that's exactly what they do mean and what they do. And we have a case of the Philistines, for example, when they said, woe unto us. Woe unto us, because the ark came. See, they said, of Israel. They said, this has not been hitherto for the gods that brought them out of Egypt. The God that brought them out of Egypt, the God that brought them out of Egypt has come into Israel. And how can we fight against this God that brought them out of Egypt? Woe unto us. We are doomed. What can we do? Because he's this mighty power. After saying that, now all concept would say, well, you better either evacuate, make a peace treaty, surrender, because if you can't fight against them, you can't fight against them. They turned right around and said, now quit yourselves like men and wax strong and be bold and let's really fight. They're still humanizing their gods. And maybe if we really fight, you know, it's incongruous in our mind. And here, they said, these be the gods of the land of Egypt. And when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made the proclamation. So now Aaron saw that, these be thy gods. It appears he tried to turn it back to Yahweh again. Because he says, he built an altar, one altar. Now he didn't build many altars, he built one for the one image. And he made a proclamation, he said, now tomorrow is the feast of Yahweh. Now he introduces, like Jack brought the other day, he introduces the word Yahweh instead of Elohim. And that will get definitive. We not make us Elohim, many Elohim, but Yahweh is but one, and tomorrow is the feast of Yahweh. Now let's keep the feast of Yahweh, see? And so this calf is going to represent Yahweh, is what he's saying. And they rose up early in the morning, and they offered burnt offerings, and they brought peace offerings. The people sat down to eat and to drink, and they rose up to play. And then the Lord said unto Moses, go, get thee down, for thy people, which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. And you notice he said, for that you brought up out of the land of Egypt, because he was to be God to the people, so he brought them out. And they turned aside quickly out of the way which I have commanded them, and they have made them a singular molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed unto, and said, these be thy gods, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore let me alone, that my wrath may wax hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make of thee a great nation. And Moses besought the Lord his God, and said, Lord, why doth thy wrath wax hot against thy people, which thou hast brought out of the land of Egypt? You never been on, you know, two sides. Sound like a husband and a wife, doesn't it? You know, both saying, "Well, it's yours, and mine. It's yours, it's yours, it's yours." Why are your children so naughty? Well, I don't know why your children are so naughty. You know. Now let's go back to Acts chapter 7 again. And verse 39, which Themis tried to read here. To whom our fathers would not obey. And that's why I mentioned it, because it said our fathers. Because that means not necessarily the fathers of Israel, but our fathers being those of an earlier point of time. There's a question as to whether they would say that with a mixed multitude, but they still could be as being the fathers. That's an academic question now. To whom our fathers would not obey, but thrust him from them. Speaking about Moses. And in their hearts turned back again into Egypt. In their hearts they turned back into Egypt. In their hearts. Their hearts were affected. Back to Egypt. Saying, so the definite connection is made, unto Aaron, make us gods. The hearts went back to Egypt, saying, make us gods, to go before us. For as for this Moses, which brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we want not what has become of him. And they made a calf in those days, and offered sacrifice unto the idol, and rejoiced in the work of their own hands. Notice what verse 42 says then. Then God turned, and gave them up to worship the host of heaven. A whole host, many gods. Since they went back to Egypt and they went to, one of their minds went back to polytheism, he gave them up into polytheism. And then he even tells the future of that polytheistic idea, as is written in the book of the prophets, O ye house of Israel, have ye offered unto me slain beasts and sacrifices by the space of 40 years in the wilderness? Yea, ye took up the tabernacle of Molech, and the star of your god Remphan, figures which ye made to worship them, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon. So this, I think, brings it into a plausible explanation as to what really happened, and why they said, these be thy gods, and why the wind calf, and what happened. The context, I think, becomes more understandable. Yes.
It's interesting too that, I don't know if you meant to elaborate on it or not, but those who haven't included all the zodiac. So I don't know what time of day it was when we finally got that thing built, but it said they went to bed and got up the next day. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they actually cast the calf when the stars were out or not, but they said these be thy gods, referring to the host of heaven simultaneous with that calf, you know, all the zodiac, mm-hmm. then that would be right there on the spot a reason why they would use the plural.
I don't really think that's the meaning, because it seems like we're finding an explanation that's outside of the context, because he's talking about the calf. They keep referring to the image and the calf, saying these be your gods. And so to take that and then to hunt for something else, whether it be stars or other things, and to have that be these be your gods, when he keeps referring to the calf as what the statement is really hunting for an explanation to solve a problem. That's where you're jumping outside of what it said. I think we've got to come back and say, when he made the calf, that's what he's talking about. He can't be that ambiguous. You can't make something, and then he refers to that and saying about the calf, these be thy gods. I think the context demands that you interpret that as referring to the calf. Make us gods. He never said make one. He made one. And they said, all right, then this calf, these be your gods. This, all the gods are in this one. This represents all of the gods. That was their concept. Then God gave them up to the host of heaven, to worship the host of heaven, at that time or a future time. And if any whether they began to worship the host of heaven, stars of heaven at that time, which I doubt, or later, would still be beyond the beyond this question as to what these refers to my mind, and you're entitled to your own opinion, but to my mind, the context demands that these, as we put it, the calf he was talking about, it's too far-fetched to take something and then make a comment about it and then say it means something else, because it fits handily. I think this is what too many commentators do. And I'm not saying this thing. I'm not saying this with any tendency to belittle any comment, but it's my job as a teacher to try to help evaluate and think, and I appreciate all your thoughts. But that's my feeling. I feel very careful. I feel we're going to be very careful that we don't hunt for the plausible. I see this by so many of the commentators some of the time. You know, they see what the context says, and they can't quite make it fit, so they hunt out here for something in history, and they grab that and say, well, let's maybe push to that. But he's saying it refers here, so you got to somehow find out how it fits here. Whatever else was done might have been because of this, or background of it, or something else, but this is what he's talking about. I think we should be careful of that. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I misunderstood you even.
No, but I just think that is what you are saying.
Mm-hmm.
It includes the concept of polytheism.
Mm-hmm. Mike?
I wonder sometimes too, because of the calf. I know that there was one Egyptian god. There was a calf that had the triangle of eternity on his forehead, and perhaps that within one god there was a polytheistic idea of one symbol representing some of the gods. And so, but I don't know enough about the Egyptian gods to know that. But
mm-hmm.
if that were the case, they might not have been at all summoned by one image representing a number of gods or a family of gods or a trinity of gods.
Mm-hmm. Who was Osiris?
Osiris was
Asuas, something like that.
Yeah, okay,
I think that's right. Okay, you know, any other comments?
We could back that up with the Hindu stuff where they've got one thing they call Siva, somebody else worships it, you know, the Brahma, and somebody else, you know, the Brahma and Vishnu and Siva are all Brahma, but Vishnu is not Siva, but it is if you want to make it Brahma, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One
God and three persons. That's what they call it. That's what it says.
He is using it as kind of an excuse, but in verses 22 to 24, he's saying, Moses said to him, "What did you do?" And he said, "Well, but the anger of my Lord waxed hot. You know the people, that they are set on mischief. For they said unto me, 'Make us gods which shall go before us.' For as this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we know not what has become of him. And I said unto them," so he's saying, I kind of resisted him.
Yeah, that's good.
I
did, thank you.
But he's going to be. The Lord talks about this.
Oh, well, what? Pardon me. What verse was that?
Verses 22 to 24. The point is that.
I got your point. Verse. What was that again?
Verses 22 through 24.
Okay, I got the point.
What is the point, though?
The point.
But you got it.
He's checking me. The point is that I made the statement that Aaron and undoubtedly was reluctant and was resisting him, and he filled the people, and he was proving it by a verse where he said they were bent upon to do mischief, and the people, you know, don't get mad at me now, the people here were crowding me, is what he's saying. Mike?
Well, one thing too here, he says, they gave me the gold and I put it in the fire and out came this calf. Funny, he didn't want anything to do with it. But the point I have is that when God was telling Moses on the Mount what they're doing down there, he used the same thing, "These be thy gods," and using the plural there, because God is revealing the fact that he knows they're going into idolatry and they're, you know, he makes it clear he's angry because they're going into idolatry and he's got to go there also.
Mm-hmm.
And later, Moses blames it on the people, not Aaron, in verse 31. It says, Moses returned unto the Lord and said, "Oh, the people have sinned a great sin and made them gods of gold."
Okay, that was verse 32?
31.
Okay, that's good. Yes. Oh, pardon me.
Yeah.
Yes.
The point I was trying to make before on verse 59 in Acts 7.
Pardon me.
It says, "To whom our fathers would not obey, but thrust in from them." So it was not that Moses was delayed, but actually in their hearts they thrust Moses out, and with Moses, Yahweh, because Moses was the introducer of Yahweh to them. You know, so they thrusted Moses and his God out, and they turned their hearts to Egypt. So Yahweh has nothing to do with these gods that they were worshiping that day.
Mm-hmm. He was saying, sorry, Dan, that's what it is. He was saying, you're implying that they were using, they found a good excuse when Moses was delayed too long. Okay? Okay, well, I'm going to move into another area.
John?
Yes. We were going to move another area.
I know in verse 7, Yahweh says to Moses, "Go down at once to your people." And then later on in verse 9, or later on in the context, God says that he's going to destroy him and all that. And that question came to my mind, why did God waste the time to tell Moses to go down and then turn right around and say, "I'm going to destroy him"? Well, that tells me that God has, that not all the people were of that heart, but the mixed multitude God was going to wipe out. Well, anyhow, the question I have is, why did God say go down, and then he says later that he's going to wipe them out?
Verse 7. Verse 7.
See, God tells Moses, "Go down once for your people, and
people have corrupted themselves.
Get thee down, for thy people that brought thee out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves.
And then verse okay. 9 says, I have seen this people, and behold, they are obstinate people. And
well, God. Yeah.
How come
the Lord has advantages from foreknowledge here. And he says, Pastor Moses, you better get back to your congregation. They'll got some mutiny on board here. You better get down there. And then he poses something that he knows he's not going to do, but he will if Moses doesn't intercede. But he sees beyond that. And he says, now these people are corrupt. I'm going to have... He says, you've been up here, you know, you're interceding for Israel. And he says, now when you're interceding for Israel and you're standing in the gap, as even as Christ did for the is going to do for the nations, because he didn't let him know that, because because of my justice, my law and of love and so forth, I'm going to have to bear with this people. Now, let me alone, and I'll destroy them and make of you a nation. And in saying that, he was posing a position to Moses. Are you going to stand for this and be willing to die for this people? Are you going to see Moses? Blot my name out of the book. I mean, he stood right there. Are you going to stand for this people? Are you going to rally to, yeah, you'd like to become the father of a great multitude yourself. What's your position? And he's God is saying this knowing all that's going to happen and knowing what he's going to do and knowing what Moses is going to do. And Moses instantly does what God knows he's going to do and hopes he will do. Because if Moses will not stand for the people in that position and carry them on, God has got to destroy him and start again. There's no sense to carry these people on. They're not going to make it if Moses won't stand and lead the people in that position and carry him. So, since Moses will, and he goes down and takes instant action and discipline, you know, breaking up the golden calf, making them drink the gold and so forth, takes instant action, then God will go ahead and work with his people, and he's pleased to work with them. He wants to bring them out of this, but he cannot and will not unless Moses will. Because he's headed down now, he's headed down for trouble. I mean, Pastor Moses, when he hits that place, he's either going to give up. And the thing that I think the biggest factor to keep Moses from giving up on the people when he saw him, because at a later time he wanted to give up and die. It's all done. I can't carry these people any longer. The biggest factor is for God to take the initiative and say, "Let me alone. I'm going to destroy him." And then Moses says, "Now wait a minute." If God hadn't said that, Moses might himself have said, "Lord, I can't take it anymore. Just kill me. I mean, just stop the wipe them out or something. I can't handle these people." See, but since God says I'm going to do it, it hit him too big. You know, to destroy that, he just came down. He hadn't seen it all yet. He just heard it by the hearing of his ears, and his heart was still with the people. Now it's a good time to tell him, get him on their side before they get down and see it. Once he sees and gets emotionally affected, he's liable to throw up his hands and want to quit. So I think God was pretty wise here in what he's doing. Yes?
From what Russ brought in verse 22 to 24, can you go quickly in verse 25 and Exodus
32?
25? Because it does seem that position.
And when Moses saw that the people were naked, for Aaron had made them naked unto their shame among their enemies, I don't know that I can give you.
Aaron as high priest is responsible.
Well, I know that, and I was going to say that, but I don't know that I can give you, everything that's involved in the answer. But one, Moses represented the people, and so after manner of speaking, God did this, and all that. It could be said of Aaron because he was responsible, but more than that. We don't know the details. Aaron may be pushed as they went up, rose up to play and do other things. They may have continued to pressure Moses. Once you take one step, you can take two steps, and you can take three steps. And they may have pressured him into certain things that which he reluctantly, if not gave direction, and if not even allowed, gave permission. Allowed by the reason the fact that he didn't stop it and take the prerogative of stopping it. That may be the answer, but I don't know precisely. Yes.
In NAS, it says that he let them get out of control rather than make them ride on them, let them lose
something. Uh huh.
Okay, so if that were true, that'd go along with what I was saying then, is that he allowed it, it went, it got away from him, and he just allowed it to happen. Okay, thank you. Now I think we're ready to go on.
I wonder if any myopic Trinitarians use this as a proof text that one God, you know, and many gods using that God.
Yeah.
Like Roman Catholics use Babylon, you know, to represent Rome and Peter.
After what I've heard, I'd believe anything. We're going to pose the question. We just started today. But was God incarnate in a full human being or in a body? And some people just they just don't believe that God was incarnate in a body, soul, and spirit, but rather in a body only. And there are a number of scriptures that make reference to the fact, you know, of and in the days of his flesh, and let's see if I can pull them out now. I'm looking for the scriptures that talk about, give some reference on the belief that being the image of the invisible God, he's just the image, and there's others too that talk about that they could make the deduction from that he was no more than just a body. Yes.
What in Hebrews about having made a body?
Yeah. The body has prepared me.
Hebrews 10:5.
Mm-hmm. So what I want is to hear your rebuttals to the concept that Jesus Christ is God incarnate in a body, and Jesus Christ was only the body of God, not only. Tom?
Off the top of my head, I remember when Jesus died, it says he gave up the ghost. And it can't be the God spirit because apparently God's spirit had left him already. He was a sin sacrifice. And it says when Jesus died, he gave up the ghost. And I take that to mean his spirit has a body, soul, and spirit in there. Not just a body.
Okay.
When Jesus said, it's not I that do the works, but the Father that dwells within me, there's obviously has the concept of God dwelling in him, but he is conscious. He has consciousness, he has will, he has volition, everything, his personality, in addition to God dwelling in him.
Okay, a body itself, if it's nothing more than a vehicle, it's nothing but flesh, it's nothing but, you know, all the chemicals, and has no soul, could not make a statement, and could not say, he that dwelt within me. The body itself then could not talk, excepting God himself would speak through it. And God cannot say the Father dwells within me, the Father. And so if it's not God talking, then who was it talking? It can't be God saying the Father dwells within me, God. And the body can only talk as something with personality and intelligence gives it, puts something in the mind and uses it, the body, to speak. That's what Larry is saying. It's real good. Yes.
The whole theology of God's word is the idea of being of Christ being incarnate, you know, of God being incarnate, reconciling the world as himself would be completely negated, seems to me, by it only being the body, because God could do that. In fact, in a sense, did that. They visited Abraham, you know, by angelic appearance. Like, you know, the sea, you know, it's a phantasm. You know, God can appear in a phantasm. And what if it was only for the blood to be shed? It's just too shallow theologically. It has to be that he walked in a place that men walk, and that I don't mean that in just the literal. It has to be that he experienced the human existence, and if he didn't. Christ, I mean, in his body, soul, and spirit. And then only in that way could he truly be the full mediator between God and man. Otherwise, God would have done another theophany other than specifically having the human manifestation.
So like it says in Isaiah, please the Father to bruise him. We're just going to make a hunk of flesh to bruise rather than him as a human being. it becomes pointless.
That chapter says he poured out his soul in the desert. Right. Uh-huh. He made his soul an offering for sin. So he's got a soul. Isaiah 53:10.
Yes, made his soul an offering. Okay, Tom?
Matthew 26:38 says, my soul is exceeding sorrowful. So plus, it talks about he preached to the souls that were in prison, and his body was in the tomb. And so it had to be something else.
James?
He said, not my will, but thine be done, showing that there was, that's in real clear, there was two wills involved. And then also when he said, I lay down my life of my own choice, I lay it down, not that, you know, just the Father.
Thomas?
We know that if there was a temple of flesh in which the second person of Trinity was dwelling, then this flesh died. Okay? But then we know that David, in Acts 2, Peter said that you're not going to leave my flesh to see corruption. Okay, this flesh now was raised up. Now, is the second person dwelling in this flesh? You know what I mean? Is the second person right now dwelling in a flesh, or is he a spirit? What happened to this flesh? Because we know it was resurrected, and it was not in the grave. That's the question. The second person is the spirit. Okay, it's God Himself. And what are you going to do with this flesh that is resurrected without soul and spirit?
Mm-hmm.
On the next verse in Acts, and he's talking about verse 26. The next verse, 27, says, because you will not leave my soul in Hades.
Okay. Now, John?
In Mark 2, we have Jesus recognizing in his spirit, you know, perceiving in his spirit the condition of people's hearts. And then in Mark 8, we have him sighing or grieving or, you know, being affected in his spirit. Which, if it would be God, we would have, maybe we'd have some kind of problem.
Okay. Now, okay, we have a good one coming up. Okay, Dan.
Acts 2:31, continuing what Dennis was saying, it says, he, seeing this before, referring to David, spake of the resurrection of Christ, that his, Christ's soul, was not left in Hades, neither his, Christ's flesh, saw corruption. So
okay.
It's spoken in one verse like Isaiah 53 does.
Okay, sweetie? I was wondering who's going to answer.
That was obedience.
And just a shell couldn't learn obedience. Now tomorrow, I'm going to ask, not tomorrow, it'll be the next week, won't it? Next Tuesday, I'm going to ask everybody here who has not given an answer today to have an answer. And if they don't give the answer that you that are, others that are excited to give, then you'll be able to give your answer. We'll go through it all. We'll take every one of them. But you hunt for an answer, because I'm going to call on you. Mike?
The scripture says Christ was tempted in all points like a tree of God's sin.
You just smashed Carol Bergman's schedule, so you have to find another one now.
And God was not, couldn't have been God that was tempted, because James says that God cannot be tempted to sin. And it can't be that the body is tempted, because the body couldn't do anything, you know, it can't make a decision if it's never willed, and it can sin in action and so forth. So it's got to be a soul. So God.
As far as we're going to go today. Unless there's somebody who hasn't spoken yet. Well, the bell's ready to ring, so.
Did you see how that has to come out of the darkness of Catholicism?
No.
So,
yes.
So you might also have Numbers 14 with the idea that Israel was looking back at Egypt. They have a parallel thing when they were in Egypt for Idea. They said, people said, let us make us a leader to take us back to Egypt. We don't have the same thing happening to God telling Moses.
Hey, thank you. Yeah.
They said that they want me to get this room here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
fine. Don't forget your, if you got test paper, if you got assignments, turn them in.
Donaldson called the Seattle Times to give him a big spiel in his publicity. So they're sending a man out tomorrow to get our story. So if you have any inputs, structure, direction, let me know, or
Who are you going to talk to? Do you know?
His name's Prime.
No, who are we going to talk to? Who's going to talk to Hill? Listen, Ron Lally? Or yourself?
They call me and talk to me. They want to talk to you, and they're friends with me.
Yeah.
And so they want to talk to someone in the party.
Yeah.
But I've alerted Ron. I thought I would talk to him and, briefly and introduce him to Ron, and Ron knows the whole package.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
That'd be fine.
Now, if you have any particular words to say.
No, I think Ron can handle it.
Question.
Yeah. I think he knows the arguments pretty well. Thank you.